Happy New Year and welcome to G.L. Horton's Stage Page. It's Sunday, the 7th of January, 2007. During last week's show, we told you Geraldine would be performing the one-woman show Martha Mitchell in mostly her own words. This show was written for Geraldine by the playwright Rosanna Yamagiwa Alfaro and directed by June Lewin, and has been seen at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh and is currently available for performance at the time and place of your choosing. Geraldine discussed last night's performance with theatrical reviewer and good friend Larry Stark. But first, here's what you can look forward to in Boston Theatre over the coming week. The Boston theater scene is off to a great start in 2007. The Public Theater, doing its first winter production, opened Noel Coward's Design for Living at the BCA Plaza. Next door at the Black Box, Alarm Clock is presenting Brian Pollock's Bombs and Manifestos. The Lyric Stage in Copley Square has the New England premiere of John Michael Chuse's See What I Want to See, which includes a contemporary take on Rashomon. The Huntington opens Cherry Orchard with Kate Burton. Moving out a bit, Wellesley Summer Theater has Polly Teal's Bronte. Waltham's Hovey Players has the chiller The Woman in Black, and Stoneham is doing the New England premiere of Men on Ice, the ice fishing musical. At Boston Playwrights, there's a double bill, Alfaro's Sailing Down the Amazon and Snodgrass's Haiku, two long one acts about coming to grips with mortality. Lots of choices and more to come. After the show, Geraldine stopped off at our place on her way to driving Larry home. It gave us a chance to talk and enjoy each other's company. Larry agreed to take a few moments to discuss the show he'd just seen. We all knew he'd find a way to talk about more than just that one show, and that we'd enjoy the conversation. Here's Larry and Geraldine after the show.
This is Geraldine Horton with Larry Stark.
Hi.
We've recently returned from one of my Martha performances where I essentially kidnapped him and dragged him out to see it. I've been performing it for over a year, and this is the first time it's been close enough to his home for him to come and see it.
A lot of things happen farther away than I can get to. I don't drive. And if people don't drive me to places, I frequently have to stay home. So I don't see things frequently that I would love to see that are just too far away.
Well, some of Martha performances would have been in private houses, so you wouldn't have been invited to those. I did try to get you to come out to West Gloucester on the interminable train to see it, but that was a bit too far.
Well, that's another problem, because once you get to Gloucester, then you have to get from the train to wherever in Gloucester the theater is, and the last time I had to do that, it cost me $20 to get to the theater.
That was by taxi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so either somebody has to pick you up.
It would have cost me less to see the show than it did to get to the show.
Yes, the West Gloucester Theater is very economically priced.
I sat there thinking, and how do I get home? And usually in situations like that, someone in the cast says, oh, are you going to Boston? And I say, are you driving? And they do, thank God.
And tonight we arranged for somebody to pick you up and bring you to the West Newton Church to see Martha.
I liked Martha.
That's good.
Martha has music, and I didn't know that Martha had music.
Well, I sent you the promo which called it Martha Mitchell Musical.
I understand that it had that title, but the important thing about how I do theater, how I try to review plays, is that I believe that I'm part of the audience. So as I walk to the, as I come to the ticket booth, the people say, oh, hi, Larry, here, we have this press packet full of things that someone has written about the play. And I say, thank you very much, but I throw them away without reading them. And they say, why? And I say, because if you need the stuff in the press packet to understand the play, then everyone sitting around me is deprived of that. And I don't want to review things under those circumstances.
Yeah, Yes, but I
would like to know what I think about the play, regardless of what anyone else tells me I ought to think about the play.
But one of the things you're entitled to think about the play, as is everybody else, is whether it's a musical, if it happens to be called a musical, in the top.
Now, part of the reason I ignored that is that I had seen part of this on a television production, and I swear that when I saw it, it was you, even though you looked a very different color. And I didn't see the whole show, but I did not remember anybody singing anything.
I was on it. I sang it. I had the same accompanist I have now.
Okay.
The music wasn't as good because we've had 18 years to work on it between
That's
the
right.
time we made that video.
Good.
By the way, that video is going to be on Newton TV, apparently. Regina Ramsey.
Newton Free TV.
Newton Free TV, the cable access.
Uh-huh.
It turns out, community access cable, it turns out that apparently there is no problem with the rights since it was originally made for a nonprofit cable company, local cable
okay.
company, though that particular company has been folded into a different nonprofit. One of the producers there is also a lawyer and understands these things and says, yes, you have the rights to this, and if Rosanna says, and Joan Faber, who does the music, say that it's all right to run it. It's all right to run it.
Good. Okay.
It's not under copyright to the cable company that made it. The rights stay with the artists.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, it's an interesting.
I'm not sure I dare watch it. I'm not sure I want to see myself 18 years ago doing the same piece. I mean, if I'm better,
That's
I'll be embarrassed about what I did before. And if I'm worse, I'll be appalled.
Yes, exactly.
You know, 20 years
exactly.
later, you should be that many years better.
Does anyone listening to us care about Martha Mitchell?
I mean, as an individual,
if you don't know anything about the individual, do you know anything about the play?
Well, we talked about Martha a little bit on previous.
Okay.
If everybody has listened to every podcast we've done since the beginning, talking about Martha. If not, all you need to know is that she was a very colorful character whose adventures, experience, and possibly you could consider tragedy, it's at least pathetic, was closely tied to the actual arc of the story of Watergate and Nixon's men who did his bidding, who were then brought before the law and condemned, and eventually some of them went to jail, including Martha's husband, who was the Attorney General of the United States, who went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty dramatic. It makes a wonderful story, and I greatly enjoy telling it. And tonight, people greatly enjoyed listening to it.
Yes. This was in a church room.
Yes, it was in a big living room, which is usually used for church meetings. So it felt like you were being invited in to visit with Martha.
About 80 people?
About 80 people, which was standing room only.
Standing room only. True. Which is enough. And an audience that was polite, attentive, and reacted, I think, properly in all the right places.
They got almost all the jokes.
Exactly.
Some of the jokes are much funnier to people who remember Martha.
Yes.
And
I
who
was
remember
the aisles at least twice.
And remember the details of what happened to her at the time and the headlines she made in the paper and the funny stories that circulated. But some of the jokes are funny not so much from the past, but because they remind you of things that have been in the headlines now, and jokes that Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert make about our present set of politicians.
We were not blessed with enough satire in the days that Nixon was around, surprisingly. There was a good deal of underground operation, and probably a good deal of spontaneous funny or satire or amusing. Part of the problem with the world that we're presented with is that unless we can laugh at it, it's a little difficult to live through it.
Well, I'm not sure that the amount of satire available increased post-Nixon. I know somebody in the audience came up to me today, some person who is very politically active and works her life devoted to good causes, and she said that the Watergate hearings were the start of her cynicism about government. Up till then, she thought that people were well-intentioned and intelligent and above board, and I don't know where she got that impression, but very early on, I directed Of the I Sing,
yes.
Which is a wonderful political satire. It's a little more gentle than we're we're used to these days, but but many of the nonsensical things that our politicians are still doing, the bloviating and the pretending to have high ideals while actually they're cutting underhanded deals and behaving exactly the opposite way that they pronounce are part of their principles when they get back in those smoke-filled rooms, or even just when they're hanging out in their hotel rooms and calling for room service and pinching the maids, are all in that script. And that kind of behavior was funny then, is funny now. But the plots being hatched against our constitutional right are not so funny.
Oh, that's true. Well, during the time that you and I lived through the Watergate problem in America, I did believe that along about now, someone would write a novel in which Martha Mitchell would be the protagonist, and she would see the world through the bottom of her cocktail glass, slightly blurry, but amazingly honest about what she was living. And from her point of view, the kind of thing that was going on was a little strange. So I'm glad to see a play that is doing exactly that with the character I thought was going to be in a novel someday.
Well, originally, Rosanna and Gustavo Alfaro were collecting the material for a book.
Yes, a nonfiction
book that would be her own words arranged to make the case against the kind of skullduggery that sometimes she was gleefully helping because she thought it was harmless and useful to her side, and sometimes she was shocked and outraged about when it somehow crossed whatever she considered the line. And the line was usually drawn where it affected her negatively. But that's certainly an ordinary human failing when you don't notice the beam in your own eye and you're anxious to go stretch the ethics a little bit in order to make hay over the moat in your brother's eye.
And she was in an excellent position to have, well, as the play suggests, she listened to conversations that her husband, who was
the Attorney General and in charge of the laws.
Yes. She listened to conversations. She listened to phone conversations.
She read the memorandums that were in his briefcase, the top secrets.
Right.
Not national security secrets, but party politics secrets. How do we get the power? How do we keep the power? How do we use the power to enhance.
To keep it out of other people's hands, too, which is a different thing from just merely winning.
And how do we do one thing while announcing that we're doing something quite different? And then not have discovered in time to stop it while it was still in process. And in fact, this was not stopped when it was in process. They basically stole that election, and they did not get the election back. You know, nobody said you have to take it back and do it over, and this time, without the dirty tricks. But he was forced to resign. Somebody was upset enough about the way that election had been handled, because the skullduggery had been uncovered before the election. Does this sound familiar? People knew, in our case, the mainstream media knew that the reasons that we were taken to war were just not substantiated, and that the administration knew this and was putting forth those reasons anyway, in spite of having, because CIA guys were telling them, they said, that's not the information we have. They're making this up, but nobody printed it. And we went into making our citizens' decisions in the voting booth, working on deliberate misinformation. At that point, you know, somebody's supposed to say, tilt! Everybody, you know, 15-yard penalty, back to first down, we do this over.
Larry Stark runs a Theater Mirror website and covers as much of the Boston area theater scene as he can manage. He is only one man, though, and lacks the ability to be everywhere each night. There are many of you, though, and that many can be many places every night and see shows Larry can't. Go to a show, big stage or church basement, then email him a quick message with the details and a few words describing what you thought about the show. He can be reached at larry@theatermirror.com. Tell him we sent you. That's it for our first show of 2007. Hope you liked it and come back for more next week. As always, send comments and suggestions to davidmeyer@mac.com. I'd like to know why so much of our audience seems to be in mainland China and why so many of you are Macintosh users, and if any of you have any experiences to share about using GL's monologues or plays in classes or auditions. Until next week.
Thank you.